Today is December 7th, Sunday morning, Sharet Tfilah, class in Mishnah, in Masechet Brachot, the ninth Perek, Perek Tet, Mishnah Bet, the second Mishnah. And we're going to read the Mishnah together, slowly, and then try to decipher it. The Mishnah begins, Al Hazikin, Val Hazvaot, Val Habrakim, Val Hare'amim, Val haruchot, Omer baruch shekocho ugvurato malei olam. So we go back and translate. It began with the word al, on, concerning, and that's going to be in the sense of on the following things, for the following things, we'll say the bracha that's at the end of the sentence. So what are these things? The first is zikin. So the word zik is usually a spark. Zikin in the plural, what does it mean on the sparks? So most of the commentators say we're talking about a comet, that this is probably the Mishnaic word for a comet.
Meteor shower?
So there are some who say it might refer to meteors. And halachically, both of them. If you see a comet, or if you see a meteor, then the bracha that is listed here is the one that you will say. So the first is al-azikin, on the comets or on the meteors. And then al-zva'ot. Zva'a is a terrible shaking up. What does it mean here? An earthquake. An earthquake. Al-zva'ot. Earthquakes. It's, neither of these words are the modern Hebrew words what we're talking about. And right, in Raman Hebrew it's a Ridat Adama. In the Tanakh it's a Rash. But apparently in the Mishnah the word is Zva'a. In the plural Zva'ot. So we have meteors and comets, and then we have earthquakes, and now we have Alabrakim. That word is in modern Hebrew, Barak. Who knows what Barak is?
Lightning.
Who's Barak?
It's the family name of the prime.
Lightning. Right. So the family name of?
Of the next prime minister, I said.
Okay. So okay, so on the comets and the meteors and on the lightning, I'm sorry, and I left out of course the earthquakes. Valeramim, Ra'am is thunder, what goes along with the lightning. Val haruchot, on winds. So on all these things, Omer baruch shekocho ugvurato malei olam. According to the vast majority of Rishonim, this refers to Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, that those words are intended. Shekocho, that his power, Ugvurato, and his might, Melei Olam, fill the world. So over these natural phenomena, you say the Baruch Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Shekocho Ugvurato Melei Olam.
I don't know, Rabbi, if you see a twister, if you see a tornado, you're going to run, not the bracha.
Okay, because they'd go in the other direction.
You can see it from the distance.
Say a quick bracha.
You can see it from underneath the overpass that you're hiding in.
This has some of the words in a different order that shouldn't...
The text has a different order. Yeah. What's the order?
It says, Al-Hazikin, V'al-Hazivot, which is the same, I think, that you said.
Yes.
And it says, V'al haramim, V'al haruchos, V'al habrakim.
So the word barak is the one that's moved. By us it's the third, and by you it's the last, and that's in the Gemara. And that's just a good example of the fact that sometimes we find variant manuscripts, and the printer that printed the Talmud has one, and the printer that printed the Mishnah has a different manuscript.
Here the word tempest is used for ruchot, to describe tornadoes, hurricanes. Is there anything else to that? Yeah.
Well, the Gemara and the Rishonim ask, is it any old ruchot? And the answer is no, it's only especially strong ruchot.
As he's getting blown away.
Yeah. Al heharim. Va'al ha-gva'ot, va'al ha-yamim, va'al ha-naharot, va'al ha-midbarot, omer, Baruch Oseh Maaseh Bereshit. Translation, on the hills and on the mountains, and I really don't know, and I didn't find in the commentators anyone who would explain why it says both hills and mountains.
I mean, that it's lower usually than mountains, I think of it. Is that right?
That could be.
Yeah, okay. In modern Hebrew.
So then, let's say that gvot are lower. So it could have said, then on the gvot, we would have known all the more so, but on the higher ones, you also say a bracha. So that's not clear to me. But in any case, it's clear that on the hills and the mountains, and on the yamim, and of course the word yamim does not mean days, but means
seas,
on the seas, and on the naharot, on the rivers, and on the midbarot, which means deserts, or perhaps it means also vast stretches of uninhabited wilderness, even if it's not desert in the sense of dry and arid. Omer, Baruch Hoseh Maaseh Bereshit, and again, according to most of the Rishonim, it means Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Oseh Maaseh Bereshit, who does the work of creation. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Haro'eh Et Hayam Hagadol, Omer Baruch Shasa Et Hayam Hagadol. So Rabbi Yehuda says, he who sees the Yam Hagadol, the Great Sea, and there's a little machlok at what the Great Sea refers to. Is it the Mediterranean, or is it only that which is large in the Mediterranean, the Okeanos, the oceans? Says, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Sha'asa Et Hayam Hagadol, who made the Great Sea. That's, by the way, I'll just tell you that halachically, we do say that bracha over the Mediterranean. And the once a year that I go to see the Mediterranean from my home in Alon Shavuot, we always say that bracha first. Then the Mishnah says, Bizman Showeuto Lifrakim. At the time that he sees it, Lifrakim. Lifrakim, literally a perek, we said it was a chapter. Sees it in chapters. In other words, sees it occasionally. Implying if you saw it every day, you wouldn't say the bracha every day. But only when you've missed seeing it for X amount of time, it doesn't say what X amount of time is, only then would you say this bracha over the Yam HaGadol. The Mishnah ends by saying, Al HaGshamim, Ve'al HaBisorot HaTovot, Omer Baruch HaTov VeHamitiv. On the rains, and on the good news, Bisorot Tovot, Bisorot are news, and Tovot is good. He says, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, HaTov V'Meitiv, who is good and does good. Tov is the, I guess it's an adjective, and Meitiv is a verb that comes from the same root, is good and does good. Ve'al al Shmuel Tora'ot Omer Baruch Dayan Emet. On bad news, he says, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Dayan Emet. And we all know that bracha from funerals. Right. Dayan Hamet, the just judge or the true judge. That's the Mishnah. Now we have to go back and understand it. And so we'll go to the questions. Question number one. What three different human senses are involved in one's becoming aware of the natural phenomenon cited in the Mishnah?
Seeing.
Hearing.
And feeling.
Very good. I thought that would be a hard question. The first two, of course, are easy. Yeah. Yeah, so the earthquake, in many cases, you can't really see, and you can't really hear in some cases, but it's a matter of experiencing it with your feel, I guess feeling is the way to say it, like Paul said. What is the full version of each of the five blessings mentioned here? We said that already, that most probably the Shema Malchut is missing. The Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam is meant, but it's not written. There are one or two Rishonim that say that these brachot are without Shema Malchut, without Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam. It's just what the Mishnah says, but that's not what most of the Rishonim say, and it's not the halacha is. The halacha is that we do say Shema Malchut. When I say Shem, I mean the name of God. Malchut means Melech, king of the world. Okay. The next question is really what we need to ask ourselves to begin understanding the Mishnah, the classic matter of divide. Divide the Mishnah into five parts and divide the Mishnah into three parts. So I'll give you 2 or 3 minutes to think about that. And if you want to use a pencil and to write it down, it might be a good idea.
Seems to give us the text, five different texts.
Right, five
of
different
brachos.
That's easy.
And then, or you can say it's the unusual phenomenon. There's the first group of, and then there's the, you know, things of beauty. And then there's the good and bad news.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. David is assuming, and he's right, that Rabbi Yehuda is clearly part of the category that comes before him.
Yeah.
Rabbi Yehuda is a subcategory of seeing the Yam, seeing the sea, which was already mentioned.
He's just chalek on it.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So, indeed, there's the first category of the, how did you say it? The
extraordinary event.
Extraordinary, right? Events, and then there is the set matters of beauty in creation, and Rabbi Yehuda is part of that second group. And then there's good and bad news. Notice, at least in my text, I don't know how it is in the Gemara, but notice that in my text, I'm going to the end of the Mishnah, where it says, Al Hagshamim. See what it says, Al Hagshamim, about the 11 or 12 words from the 14 words from the end of the Mishnah. Alak Shemim, on the rains. Vale besorot tovot omer baruch hatov meitiv. On the rains and on the good news, he says baruch hatov meitiv. Al, at the very beginning of the sentence, doesn't begin with above. It's just al. It's a new section. But after the words hatov meitiv, it says ve'al. And on the shmur ra'ot. And on evil news, he says baruch tayan emet. So I'm just pointing out that, at least according to this text, there really are three separate parts of this Mishnah. The part that David identifies, part number three, internally is not divided up. It has a vav that connects what you might have, what the two different texts are connected by a vav. Whereas in the earlier parts of the Mishnah, the part of the beginning about extraordinary phenomena and then the part about natural beauty, those two parts are not connected by a vav. The place you should look is after the words of the first bracha, Baruch Shekocho Ugvuato Mele Olam, then it says Al Harim, doesn't say Ve'al, it just says Al, beginning another part. And of course that Rabbi Yehuda is part of the previous part, that's obvious, that doesn't need any textual hint. Rabbi Yehuda is clearly telling us a bracha that's a subcategory of the bracha on the general seas. On a particular sea, you say a particular bracha. So it would seem that there are three different themes or three different subjects in the Mishnah.
It does, I think that this conforms with what you just said. Your text has, except that at the end it doesn't have a v'al on the b'shorot.
It doesn't. Ah.
Does not. At the very, just yeah. On the bad tidings.
Yeah, even though I didn't know that, it was pretty clear that there must be a textual variant in that. It's so easy to miss. So you just confirm. So I would say that our text that does have a vav makes a lot of sense. It doesn't prove it's the correct text, but it does make sense, at least that is certainly so.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Why does it say Besuros Tobos and then Shmuos Ravos?
Ah, yeah. Right. That's a question that's asked.
Is it? Okay.
It could be. I mean, a simple answer might be that's just the expression that's used idiomatically.
Right. That's the answer.
I think it is.
That's the answer I would give. In other words, the question was, just to make it clear to everyone, we're talking at the end of the Mishnah of good news and bad news. So you might have expected the word for news to be the same word, modified by the word good and bad. But it's not so. Rather, it says, Va'al ha-bisorot ha-tovot, on good news, and the word for news is bisorot. Then when it goes and says bad news, it doesn't say bisorot va'ot, it uses a different word for news. The word being shmuot.
When it's negative, you want to think of it only as a rumor.
Right, there are different types of tirutzim, like you just tried to suggest. But perhaps what Eric said at the beginning is the most true. That some of the word bisorot is always used in the sense of good news. You modify it with the word tovot, but there's never such a thing as bisorot ra'ot. It's an oxymoron. The word bisorot means something good.
You're saying that the bad news it says what?
In your Shmuot Ra'ot. And it doesn't use the word Bisorot.
This does.
Oh really?
Am I misreading?
Goodness gracious, straight balls of fire.
Oh. Am I in the wrong?
Goodness gracious.
It says Bisorot Ra'ot?
That's what it says in the art scroll. Let's see over here. So, al bisorot tovot omer baruch hatov meitiv val bisorot raot. I didn't even notice that. So let me take my glasses off, which I did already. I still can't see.
Well, the modernist really sounds strange. Bisorot raot.
So I'm trying to look.
Sounds strange.
In the footnotes. So in this printing.
That supposedly is the Vilna,
Shas,
as
right.
I say, classic Vilna edition.
Yeah, and I didn't even look there.
But they do have some extra notes.
It's impressive.
Well, I'll blame the light. I can't see.
Excuse me. And do you know what the source text for this would be, for the copy that you have, that's the professor Alter?
Well, it's not so much particularly Professor Albeck's edition.
Uh-huh.
It's that all of the printed Mishnayot in our generation come from a certain manuscript of the Mishnah, whereas the manuscript that was used 400 years ago to print the Vilna Shas was a different manuscript.
Right, okay.
So indeed we see here a difference that isn't significant in the sense of meaning, but it's certainly a completely different word. Okay. So with that we can go to the next question, which was question number 4, which is easy and actually was full answered question 4 already 10 minutes ago. Question 4 is, what type of ruchot do you think that the Mishnah is talking about? And Paul said tempest. Right, since it's in the category of Zikin, comets and meteors, and Zvaot, earthquake, and Brakim and Ramim, thunder and lightning, and then it says Ruchot, it's not just the Ruchot that you experience every day, it's extraordinary.
Unbelievable. They don't have Ruchot in Eretz Israel, do they? I've never heard of a tornado or a hurricane going through Eretz Israel.
I've never heard of a tornado or a hurricane.
Oh, Jerusalem gets very heavy.
But there sometimes are extremely heavy winds.
Well, not some of the Sukkah.
That would fall under the category of Ruchot, the strong, very strong ones that Eric mentioned.
I guess so. You know, it's interesting. the commentators who were not in Eretz Yisrael, some of them do say it doesn't refer to Norman Ruchot, but only to what they seem, the words they use seem to refer to tornadoes and cyclones, whatever. But you're right, in Eretz Yisrael we don't have such things.
Right.
And the Mishnah was certainly edited in its tradition as an Eretz Yisrael. And I'm assuming that we don't have cyclones today. We didn't have them 2,000 years ago.
No, probably not.
What they there are big wind storms. I mean, we read about sandstorms and things like that in the desert, etc., that are extremely not violent in the same sense as a cyclone or hurricane-type storm, but strong winds.
Yeah, what we don't have is the qualitative difference. We do have a quantitative difference, but it makes it harder to find the demarcation point. When does it become a serious wind?
I remember when there were really, really strong winds in there as well. They said like 90 miles an hour and up or something like that. That was the
maybe kilometers.
That was the Pesach.
Yeah,
like 90 miles per hour.
Yes, it has to be 90 kilometers.
I bet it would be kilometers. Yeah. That would be hurricane.
That's hurricane strength. That's not, you don't have that.
Yeah, I
90 miles, like 90 kilometers would be about 50 miles an hour. That's a very, very strong wind.
On Sukkot, do you remember the Sukkot got knocked over a few years?
Okay. Question 5 is the same type of question as question 4. What type of harim and gvoot and what type of yamim and naharot do you think that the Mishnah is talking about? And it just comes to point out that we're probably not talking about the hillcrest down the street. We're talking about a harim and gvoot that are more impressive, that are more out of the ordinary than what you find in Dallas. And the same thing with naharot and yamim. It's not talking about White Rock Lake. And it's certainly not talking about the creek right by here when it says the Naharot. It's talking about serious, big, extraordinary Yamim and Naharot.
Although it's interesting to notice the Jordan River, if we were to see it by American standards, is like a creek. We would call it a creek.
And that would lead us to believe that you don't say this blessing over the Jordan, but then Eric would say, wait a second, then what do you say it over when you're in Eretz Yisrael? That's a good question.
Right.
Hmm.
We don't have the Mississippi.
Okay, you're right about that.
Have the Volga.
So that brings us to what I said earlier, that the Mifrashim, that you're right, the Mifrashim that say we only say it over big rivers like the Volga and the
Nile. Nile's not too far.
Or would it be
this text doesn't come from Babel.
Bodies of water, river, or seas that have a connection to Israel, right, that border Israel in some way?
Well, I'm just thinking of what the authors of the Mishnah would have had in mind when this was written, and not just authors of the Mishnah, but the tradition of hundreds and hundreds of years before it, but it's all a tradition in Eretz Yisrael.
Well, it would be the Tigris and Euphrates and the Nile in that region of the world. Those are all world-class rivers.
So then I ask myself, does that mean that the authors of the Mishnah thought that someone who lived his whole life in Eretz Yisrael would never say these brachot over the Yamim, let's say over the Naharot? Is it meant to include the Jordan? Mm-hmm. It certainly could be that, and I'm only guessing, but it could be that commentators in the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th centuries that said it means the Volga River, they didn't know that Jordan River was a creek.
Right.
If they had known the Jordan River was a creek, they might have said, you say the bracha over a creek. So I'm a bit confused now.
Or it could be that where you live, what is normal and not extraordinary, you don't say a blessing on. It's an everyday occurrence. But when you see something extraordinary,
it's subjective to the it's very
person.
Interesting.
It's relative depending on where you live.
Which would actually fit with our, with what Rabbi Yehuda says about what they call the Great Sea, which I guess means Mediterranean. He says, you say a
special,
special one for it, but not if you live at Tel Aviv, because you're seeing it every day.
I see. So.
After all, they're clearly for something that's extraordinary to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or I shouldn't say clearly, but it's...
Okay.
The idea makes sense if it is extraordinary for you to see this thing.
So then the nafkamina, the halachic way to test this, would be someone who lives in Eretz Yisrael, do you say this bracha over the Jordan River? Right. Okay. I don't know. I don't know.
Yep.
Well, what David just said brings up the consideration of a frequency. What constitutes this event warranting a bracha?
Yeah. Well, but he's extrapolating from that to another question, right? The fact that frequency is an issue means, says David, there's a certain degree of subjectivity here. Mm-hmm. What it impression it makes upon you.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a question to be asked.
And there's a question whether Yom HaGadol refers indeed to the Mediterranean or not?
In the Mefreshim there's a question, yeah. The halacha is that it does.
Yeah. Because it seems like in the context of 1st, 2nd century CE Eretz Yisrael, the only known sea was probably the Mediterranean.
Known in the sense of...
Well, for the person living in Eretz Yisrael...
Oh, that they would see it.
Yeah. It's under the Roman... No, they probably knew about the Atlantic, but...
Kinneret, that's a
yarn,
isn't it?
Yeah, I guess you say the bracha over the Kinneret. The truth is I've never done that, never thought of it. I've said Rabbi Yehuda's bracha. I've never said this bracha over the Kinneret.
For Americans, that would be a small lake. The Kinneret would be a small lake.
Well, a medium size lake.
Not so small.
It's bigger than the White Rock Lake.
Well, it's called the Great Lake.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so we have to ask ourselves, do we say this bracha over the Kinneret, and do we say it over the Jordan River, and is we to be broken down into different subgroups? Okay, number six we also pretty much talked about. We can say a little bit more about it. What is the difference between the phenomenon cited in parts 1 and 2?
One, of course, an event.
All right, that's a very good way to say it. Number one are events.
Number two is emotions.
Emotions? You're extrapolating. You might be right in the long run.
Oh, this Bisro Tovot?
No, number two, I meant the bracha over the Harim and Gvarot, and Yamim and Naharot and Midbarot.
Yeah, those aren't events. Those are, you know, permanent, so to speak, permanent. I mean, those are natural.
They don't change within our lifetime.
Right, he goes to them.
Things like that.
Right, say it again?
He goes to them.
As opposed to them going to you.
Them coming to us, yeah. That's a good distinction.
A way to say it.
Yeah. Okay.
So current, you're saying the first is current event, like a current event, or a current
extraordinary event. Well, it's an event that's happening.
Yeah.
It's something that's happening.
In the present.
As opposed to a mountain that's a
fixed natural phenomena.
Yes. Current or perhaps temporary, temporarily extraordinary, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Next, question 7. Why is it fitting to say Kocho Ugburato, and I'm referring to the first bracha, that his power and his might fills the world, over the first set of phenomenon, and Osema Sebreshit, he who does the work of creation, over the second set of phenomena?
I would say that the first ones inspire fear, and the next set inspire more like awe.
That's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm just looking over my questions. I had a question that what you just said was the answer to it, and I can't remember now if it was part of question 7 or had it differently on the sheet. Let's see. Hmm.
a different way to approach that is that God's power, meaning current participation in world events, because that's a current, it's a storm. God created the storm. God created, caused the earthquake now.
Right.
Whereas if we don't give consideration to the geological processes, mm-hmm. which aren't mm-hmm. really considered here, the mountains, right. the river, those are a result of the original creation.
Right. Right. And both of these things are correct on different levels.
And in practice today, why do we differentiate between...
Yeah, we have to get to that. So let's go another step with what David said.
Okay.
If the first bracha is indicative of God's current and, let's say, immediate intervention, and the second bracha harks back to the earlier work of creation, the original work of creation, what theology stands behind that distinction?
Oh, is it that one is the constant intervention of Hashem in this world and the other is kind of a historical event?
Right.
That
right.
The interaction stopped with that event.
Yes. So.
And we note God created the world, but didn't quit. He's still a participant in the world. I mean, that's it's that simple of a reaffirmation of that theology, isn't it?
Or I'm not sure if I'm right about that, but I had the feeling there was more of a machloket theologically about that. To what extent Hashem participates in the world?
So how would you, let's say, theoretically, argue against or change the halakha in this Mishnah to reflect a different theology?
Different than which theology?
Well, David had said there's a certain theology here,
yeah.
And you're saying there might be a machloket.
I would say Baruch Hosei Maasei Bereshit would support the theology that maybe the interaction isn't what David would perceive it to be.
Okay, so in other words, you would say that even over thunder and lightning, perhaps we should say, Osem Maaseh Bereshit.
Yeah, right.
In order to make clear that perhaps God is the watchmaker, right?
Right.
Who put everything into...
And then Olam Kamina Go Noheg.
Right. Put everything into this... I forgot the word, the expression. Put everything into gear, perhaps,
right.
And then it goes by itself. If that was our approach, we would only say Baruch Hosem Maaseh Bereshit. Whereas the Bracha Kochog Burato Mele Olam perhaps is a theological statement. No, God is presently at work.
And then maybe you would say that also on the mountains.
Now let's go the other direction.
Yeah.
Exactly. What if we want to object to the theology that certain things God made and left them like that? So then we go in the direction Eric is going now. Let's say the bracha of Kocho Gvurato Mele Olam, even over the mountains, in order to show and prove and emphasize that there's nothing that God created and left as it is. Rather, Kadosh Baruch was always involved.
It's nice. So the Mishnah kind of leaves room for both theologies, you might say.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. But the reason I'm emphasizing this is because the Gemara objects to the Mishnah and thinks something terrible going on here. We perhaps could read the Gemara as objecting to the theology of the Mishnah. We'll have to understand what's the objection. So now we're just setting the groundwork for the Gemara. And that goes back to what Paul mentioned a few minutes ago. Today's halakha, we don't do like the Mishnah.
I missed that. So in what?
Well, we'll get to it. Wait, he just made a comment and I said we'll get to it.
Oh, okay.
This was 5 minutes
all right,
ago.
Sorry. Well, then I didn't miss it.
Lightning gets one bracha and thunder gets another.
You just missed the trailer.
Okay.
You missed the advertisement.
But also if we're being created every moment, it would say.
Everyone is fine.
Everybody's good.
No vote.
If they weren't fine, I would call on you.
You understand. Shalom u'bracha.
And you too. Thank you, Mr. Ericker.
There's a movie once, The Enforcer or something?
Yes.
The point about David saying that every moment things are created, right? So really there's a Bereshis, my Bereshis is going on right now, mm-hmm. right? So everything we do is normal according to my Bereshis, everything happening. Because right? Everything being created, every moment according to my Bereshis, right? It's a new creation every single.
Well, you're using the words differently than they were used earlier, which you're saying is certainly possible.
A historical event that was set in place but doesn't show the constant interaction.
But Kolos Ubrachim are not Mayis Bereshis. They're not in the normal creation of things. They're not in this, so they're abnormal. They're not, they're like mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. not normal cause. They're not normal things. Like a tempest is not normal. You know? Mm-hmm. So,
right, we could, although the story of creation in the first chapter of Bereshit doesn't specifically mention mountains, but you understand that when it says the earth was created and the dry land was separated, you understand includes mountains. They're part of the dry land. Mm-hmm. Whereas there's no place in the creation story that you could even add in that God created lightning. It's not part of the sky, in the sense that mountains are part of the earth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's something we didn't mention in the past 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then just, I'm sorry, one other thing is you don't have, I don't think the Torah, well, okay, I won't say that. You can make arguments both cases about the constant interaction of Hashem in the world or not, I guess.
In general or in the Mishnah?
No, in general. I'm just thinking
you can. Let me point out something that we ignored in our previous discussion. It throws a monkey wrench into things. Perhaps I shouldn't say it, but what can I do? At least in our text, it says Baruch Oseh Maaseh Bereshit. Uh-huh. It doesn't say Baruch Asah.
Right. Present tense.
Oseh.
In the present.
Right.
Say. Right. It says Asah.
Right. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda in our text does say Asa as opposed to Oseh.
Ah. So that's maybe one of the machlokes.
Although there is a text in which Rabbi Yehuda has it in the present, Oseh. So I don't know how much we could build upon this. Perhaps it's just a textual variant.
Just to be clear, so that
yes,
Oseh
is the
present tense.
Yes.
Could it also be?
And the I just want to make that.
Yeah, and had it been Asa, would have been past tense.
Which is the way it is for Rabbi Yehuda.
Right. So until now, we were assuming that the bracha Baruch Oseh Maaseh Bereshit refers to God, the watchmaker, who created the mountains at creation and has since left them alone. But now I'm pointing out that it's in the present tense.
But could Oseh also be a kind of adjective? The maker. Blessed is the maker.
Right.
Not the verb, but kind of.
Oh, that's very good that you said that, because that's really 100% true.
Okay.
Because there is really no present tense in Hebrew.
Right.
It's what's called the Benoni Poel, the present participle, which serves, which is really an adjective serving as a verb. Let me give you an example of it. Everyone probably knows the word, or most people know the word shomer. You know the word shomer?
Mm-hmm.
To guard. When I say in Hebrew, who shomer? Who shomer? We can translate it in two fashions. You can say it, he is guarding, or he is a guard.
He's the one who's guarding.
He is the one who's guarding. Or he's the guard. Mm-hmm. Who's shomer? The word shomer is really not a verb. It's really the shomer, the guarder. But we understand it as a verb, so the same thing here. Eric is 100% correct. Baruch Oseh doesn't mean blessed is he who is creating. It means blessed is the creator.
Right.
So you're right.
Okay.
And therefore it takes the, as we say in Hebrew, it takes the stick out of the axle. In other words, it lets us go back to what we thought originally, that it could indeed be talking about God the watchmaker. The original watchmaker who's not presently intervening. Thank you. That really, oh. You saved us from,
from ourselves.
But I guess it could be read both. I mean, it's somewhat ambiguous. Okay.
No. Yeah. Okay. So now, we are back in our seats. 8. In what sense is Rabbi Yehuda's stance at the beginning of the 6th chapter of this tractate similar to his stance here? So Paul has the beginning of the 6th tractate, and David has it.
And as everyone's looking, I'm actually going to take some notes.
Can I read this mission in English?
Yeah.
In what manner does one recite the blessing on fruits? On the fruits of the trees, one says, "Grapefruit, haetz," except for wine. For on wine one says, "Bre'pri hagafen," and on the fruit of the ground one says, "Adama," except for bread. For on bread one says, "Hamotzi," and on greens one says, "Bre'pri hadama." Rabbi Yehuda Omer, "Bre mine desha'im," one who creates species of herbage.
Yes.
So he's more specific, I guess you would say.
Right, he's more specific. Look at the way that the Mishnah is worded.
Yehuda gets more specific.
I'll just read again what David read. How do we bless the produce? On the produce of the trees, we say break priates. I'm leaving part out. On the produce of the ground, we say break priadama. On vegetables, which are a certain subcategory of those things grown from the ground, we say break priadama, but Rabbi Yehuda says break mine deshaim. So Rabbi Yehuda makes this subcategory, whereas the Tanakhama says the subcategory is the same blessing as the larger category, Brei Pri Adama. And the same thing in our Mishnah, that we have this subcategory of seas, which is the really big sea, and Rabbi Yehuda gives it a separate bracha. So indeed it's the principle of specificity.
And that takes the... It doesn't seem to be based on theology in this case.
Perhaps it's not right. Perhaps it's not. So Rabbi Yehuda wants more specific brachot. And of course there are pros and cons to brachot that are more and more specific. The pros are clear. Separate bracha allows us and causes us to pay better attention to the individuality of the situation. And if the whole purpose of a bracha is to cause us to stop and think and appreciate, well, the more specific the bracha, the more you have to appreciate the specific phenomenon. That certainly makes sense. What about the cons? Why would someone object to Rabbi Yehuda?
The practicality of it. It's hard to remember
It, the system can no longer, at a certain point, the system is no longer useful as it was meant to be, because it's not something that's in everyone's pocket, in the front of his consciousness. It gets too complicated. It's hard for us to understand that problem, because that's the problem of halacha in general today, right? That it's so complicated, you can't use it. You have to look it up for 5 hours till you get the answer of what bracha to say over ice cream.
Also, right? To the modern person, we get our produce from the grocery store. We don't really think about the source of it.
Right. So then we get, that brings us to the following question, the next question, which is, 9. Do you think that the Tanna Kamma agrees or disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda? How does a comparison to the first Mishnah of chapter 6 shed light on this question? You said the Tanna Kamma disagrees, which is certainly possible, because Reuven would say, if the Tanna Kamma agreed, then why are the words of Rabbi Yehuda brought as the words of Rabbi Yehuda? They could just be brought anonymously. If it's brought as someone else's opinion, perhaps it indicates the Tanna Kamma would think differently. But you don't have to say what Reuven said. It could be simply, this was Rabbi Yehuda's idea, and that's why it's brought in his name, but that doesn't mean that others disagreed. It could be that others heard what he said and said, yes, that's good. Could be.
I think Rabbi Yehuda is saying over here in our Mishnah that you only make the bracha on the Yom HaGadol and not another Yomim.
No, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that. He has a separate, different bracha for one who sees the Yom HaGadol that says, blessed is he who made the Yom HaGadol, but he certainly doesn't disagree with the Tanna Kamma. And you might be right that the Tanna Kamma disagrees with him, but he doesn't disagree with the Tanna Kamma. But on the other hand, comparing our Mishnah to chapter 6 does really seem to clinch the answer to the question. Not 100%, but 90%. Because in Mishnah 6, and this is going to be hard for those who don't have it in front of them, Mishnah 6, originally, near the beginning, it said over Perot Ha'aretz, you say Brei Pri Adama, Perot Ha'aretz. And then we have this category of Yirakot, which would seem to be a subcategory of Adama, of which Rabbi Yehuda says you say Brei Minei Desha'im. Before Rabbi Yehuda gives his special opinion, the Mishnah, the first Mishnah of chapter 6, says, Allah Yirakot Hu Omer Brei Pri Adama. Rabbi Yehuda says, Brei Minei Desha'im. In other words, in order to show us, Rabbi Yehuda argues on the Tanna Kamma, it tells us that what the Tanna Kamma says first. In other words, it singles out the special case that Rabbi Yehuda is referring to of the Yirakot, and says the Tanna Kamma says on Yirakot, you say the regular bracha that you say over Adama. Applying that to our Mishnah, and I know this is hard to follow with having the Mishnah in front of you, applying that to our Mishnah, it should have said, Al Hayam HaGadol Omer Oseh Maaseh Breishit, Rabbi Yehud Omer Shasat Hayam HaGadol. In other words, if Rabbi Yehud was arguing, it could have first said that the Tanna Kamma says what he says, specifically on the Yom HaGadol, and then Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you say, Baruch Shasat Yom HaGadol. So comparing to Mishnah 1 of chapter 6 gives us a reason to think that in our case Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing, that the Tanna Kamma actually would agree. It doesn't clinch it 100%, but it clinches it, say, 90%. I said 90%, perhaps 80%. Which means I shouldn't say clinches it, it only kind of helps it along. And indeed, what I'm saying is supported also by the halacha lema'aseh. The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda.
Right.
Why? He's a dat yachid. He's a, what is it in English? Dat yachid?
A single opinion.
A single opinion.
Lone
opinions. The answer might be because the poskim understood that he's not a lone opinion.
Or could it be that he has, the text brings his last? So there's something to be said for
No. Okay. Going on. Question 10. what is the meaning of the condition Bisman Shiroe Oto Lifrakim? So that we said it means at the time when he sees it occasionally. Question will only be, what are the intervals?
What do we say, 30 days or something?
But the halach has 30 days, right. Right. Question 11 must have us thinking, as far as the structure of the Mishnah. Let's look at question 11. What is difficult or unclear with the above-mentioned condition, this matter of prakim, intervals, in light of its grammar? In other words, what tension is there between its grammar and its logic in the context of the Mishnah?
Could it almost be the Mediterranean in parts of the sea? Is that what?
That's not what I mean.
Okay. Thinking too much.
I'm referring, to help you out with the question, I'm referring to the object. Bizman shoe oto lifrakim, the word oto.
Just the Yom HaGadol.
Right. Just the Yom HaGadol, the riut, is what it would indicate grammatically. But as far as the logic of it,
it would seem like any yam.
Right. Yeah. Not just any yam, but
any desert,
any mountain.
Desert, right.
Perhaps even any ruchot.
Yeah. Why does it say specifically about Yom HaGadol?
Or any comet.
Yeah.
What if a comet stays in the sky for 30 days? Do you say the brach every half an hour? No. You might say only Bizman Shoe Oto Lifrakim. So the question is, why does it say Bizman Shoe Oto? It should have said Bizman Shoe Otam.
Uh-huh.
Them, as opposed to it.
But is this a text that's attributed to Rabbi Yehuda?
When you said, is this a text, what do you mean by this?
Where does it end? In other words, Rabbi Yehuda omer harowe et Yom HaGadol omer Baruch Shasa et Yom HaGadol bizman she'oto lifrakim. That's
exactly the question.
Right.
Who says the words bizman she'oto lifrakim? Is that part of Rabbi Yehuda's statement, as is indicated by the word oto?
Uh-huh.
Or is it part of the Tanakhama statement, as indicated by the logic of the whole thing?
Right.
This grammatical, what you're saying, oto, is that the suffix of a word, or is that a separate word?
The word oto means it, mm-hmm. and had it meant them, it would have been otam.
Mm-hmm.
At the time that he sees them.
I'm trying to find the word. Where is it, right after bizman?
Yes, bizman shoe oto.
So this is shero ehu.
Ah.
Oh.
So that Ro'ehu just takes the word oto and makes it as part of the suffix.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been, as far as the logic of the Mishnah,
Ro'am? We don't see,
there is no such form.
No. Ro'ehotam.
I actually can't think of a form. But we don't use that.
It's
just in theory. Yeah, so ro'ehu means ro'eh oto.
Sees it.
Sees
it. Singular is the point.
Singular. And
yeah.
We'd expect it to be ro'eh otam. So it's a problem. Because again, there's no reason logically to limit this principle of interval sightings to the Yom HaGadol.
If it's a text, if it's Rabbi Yehuda's text, it's almost like Rabbi Yehuda wasn't part of this whole discussion. He was pulled in. There was Tanaitic material and he was taken out.
So what Eric said could actually answer our question. You could say that Rabbi Yehuda said this, Bizman Shoe Oto, Rabbi Yehuda said it in a separate source. It was incorporated into this Mishnah without changing its words, but the editor wants us now to understand that it refers to the whole thing, which by the way is the halakha. The halakha is that even though Rabbi Yehuda is talking about Rabbi Yehuda's case, apparently, grammatically, logically it applies to all the cases. Okay. We go now to question 12. What is the meaning of the word mitiv? So we said the bracha is hatov mitiv, God who is good and does good. Mitiv is the verb. God is mitiv. He does good. Just like we said in Shmona Esrei, meimit, God does death. So mitiv, he does good.
And based on the form here, it would seem like it's more a present tense verb as opposed to osei, right? It's harder to say in this case that it's just the adjective or not. In other words, with osei...
I'm not sure why you would say that. Why don't you just be consistent? It's a participle.
Okay.
You can't see it.
I'd say a person that is a do-gooder.
Yeah.
I thought that the osef form... Okay.
Not in our usual meaning, of course.
Yes. Question 13. What difference between the gshamim and the phenomenon said at the beginning of the Mishnah? What's the difference between gshamim and zikim and zvaot and brakim and ramim and ruchot? What difference between the gshamim and the phenomenon said at the beginning of the Mishnah is behind the directive to say hatov meitiv for the gshamim.
It's life.
It's
rare in Eretz Yisrael.
There's
go ahead. Well, I was just going to point to what Reuven said. The comets and the thunder and lightning are, how did we call them earlier? They're events. Mm-hmm. Events that don't do good or bad for us. They might even do bad, but they certainly don't do good. Whereas Kshamim is an event just like their events, but it's good for us. That's why we have gshamim in the category of Baruch HaTov Meitiv.
And it's interesting to me that included in that is Besoro Tovot.
Which are good for us,
right,
by definition.
Right.
Right. I'll just give you an example. The two examples of Besoro Tovot the Gemara gives are a son is born to you, you're here. And the other example was that you hear that you just got an inheritance.
Right.
By the way, when you get an inheritance, you also hear about a death. Mm-hmm. So that's the case in which you first say, Baruch Dayan Emet, then you say, Baruch HaTov Meitiv.
But the comment in here on the inheritance, or on when you say HaMeitiv, is that others be involved, so that you're not the lone inheritor, that there
right.
are others, so that you say the bracha with them. So
right.
That was interesting.
We'll get that's in the halakha.
Yeah.
I got an inheritance once in my life, and I must admit I didn't know to say this bracha.
Yeah.
Okay. Next. We are in question 14. Can you think of any case in which one might actually say kocho ugvorato for the gshamim?
Flood,
right? If there's gshamim that cause tremendous damage and they're tremendously powerful and tremendously awe-inspiring, then in theory you could think of saying the bracha of kocho ugvorato melei olam and not saying the bracha v'tov meitiv.
Or the tsunami, maybe.
Tsunami, flood. If you're still alive.
Yeah. But there were so many people that were killed in that tsunami.
Yeah, you certainly apparently wouldn't say a Tov Meitiv.
No.
So we can say the Gshamim they're talking about are Gishmei Bracha of some sort.
I know somebody was saved in the tsunami by a helicopter.
So he would bench Gomel.
Yeah. Ready? Wow.
Wow.
So now we get to question 15. What is the logic or message of mandating a blessing over Shmuot Ra'ot?
Well, this kind of forces a certain theology.
Yeah, which is?
That somehow Hashem... I think the first thing it says is that Hashem caused that somehow. Hashem which is hard to say.
Yeah. Hard to say.
But it forces it down. It almost forces you to say something that's contrary to what people want to say. People are feeling. I don't know.
This is actually going to be the whole subject of last Mishnah of the Masechet. It comes back to Shmuel Kraot and the Bracha of Baruch Dayan Emet. So we'll save the theology for then. But there's a lot to think about in saying a Bracha over Shmuel Kraot.
To me, it's like saying Kaddish. It forces you in a time when you might, as a human, you know, your human feelings might make you not feel good about God. We require that you go the other direction. You have to bless God and exalt God and acknowledge God, acknowledge your loyalty to God, even when you don't feel so good about the way the world's gone, the way things have happened.
So that's this, perhaps the psychological effect of it. What are we actually saying? Again, you're talking about psychology, he's talking about theology. We could agree with the psychology, but we could still have a problem with theology.
Well, it doesn't have to have any theology in it. It doesn't have to have a theological statement, does it?
Not sure.
I think that's a very interesting statement you're making, I think.
Because I was thinking this,
I mean, we say you sit Shiva 7 days and then you get up. Does that have a theological basis? Is that what, you know, is that making some theological statement?
Probably.
See, I would say that it's more psychological.
Right. I mean, it sounds practical what you're saying, but there's much more to, you know, my guess is there's much more to it.
Well, I'm not saying that's not possible.
Right.
I'm just saying that it's not inherently required.
Mm-hmm.
That the fact that we say this blessing is necessarily taking a position on theology. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
That could be.
It's not required that it be true.
Mm-hmm.
It can merely be designed as part of the way you run your life. That's mm-hmm. what you do to keep your life going and keep yourself attached to your Judaism and to your faith in God, etc.
Yeah, that's important to keep on the table. It's an option that I usually, by the nature of my personality, don't tend to, but I think it's very important to leave that open. Okay, thank you. Okay, okay. Getting towards the end of the questions here. What is the logic of not mandating the bracha of a tov meitiv over Shmuel Kraot? This question I like better than the previous question. Question I struggle with. But no, I just want to point out that isn't it interesting that we're not commanded to say a tov meitiv over b'surot rot, because you could think of a theology that says, as many people say, right? Every gamzola tova.
Right.
So why don't we say, you hear about death, why don't you say, great! And we've heard of such things in certain types of wakes of Christian denominations, that they are happy that the person is now in a better world.
Not just Christian.
Rather?
Also the Muslim.
Ah, okay.
It's just that's a very contemporary.
Yeah.
That we hear
in the news,
the
right? Right.
Oh, you mean the contemporary Shaheed?
Yeah.
Okay, what's
Yeah, there's, okay. You know, they're celebrating.
Okay, so that's not here, right?
Right.
You don't say over B'Sarut Road, you don't say Baruch HaTov Meitiv. You say something, but you don't say HaTov Meitiv. Okay. Mm-hmm. Next. 17. How are the phenomena cited in the first Mishnah of the chapter, of this chapter, fundamentally different from those cited in the first two-thirds of the second Mishnah. So to make it easier, the first Mishnah has the bracha over Nisim. And the specific wording of the matter was, if you see a place where Nisim were done to our forefathers, then you say a certain bracha. And if you say a place in which idolatry was uprooted, you say a bracha. So how is that different than the cases in our Mishnah about the Zikim and the Zvaot and the Brakim and the Gvaot and the Yamim and the Naharot?
For one thing, ours are not special to the Jewish people. They're universal, completely universal, whereas the others are really Am Yisrael matters.
Right. Right. But even more than that...
Also, there are the past events.
Past as opposed to present. That's a second important point. And a third important point is that the matters in our Mishnah are not extraordinary for their good effect on us. They're extraordinary in and of themselves. Whereas the emphasis on the Nisim is not so much the extraordinary nature, but the fact that the extraordinary nature was harnessed for the good of the Jewish people. So the first Mishnah, we're talking about a certain good effect on the Jewish people. The second Mishnah, we're more talking, at least in the first two-thirds, we're talking about more universal phenomena, not necessarily in their good effect on people. There might even have a bad effect on people.
Also, this thought that the first Mishnah was talking about spiritual phenomena. You're getting rid of a miracle. A nace is a spiritual phenomenon, right? It's uprooting a Avodah Zarah. It's making a tikkun, right? It's making a tikkun. It's doing something spiritually to the world. But these are all physical. The lightning and the mountains.
Right? I agree, though the use of the spiritual is ambiguous, right? A nes makes a physical change in the world. You know, Kriyat Yam Suf, the Makot, makes a physical change. But if you meant by the word spiritual, does good for Am Yisrael.
That's
certainly the case. Yeah. So now I just wanted to do question 18 to analyze the last third of our Mishnah in light of the dichotomy established in the previous question. Where does the last third of the Mishnah fall in this distinction between Mishnah 1 and the first two-thirds of Mishnah 2? The end of the Mishnah, is it talking about objective phenomena, or is it talked about its subjective effect on people?
I think you'd have to say the subjective effect on people.
I think that's probably the case.
Yeah.
Now, even something that's bad for everyone else and it's good for you, if it's good for you, then it's b'sorot tovot. Then it's b'sorot tovot. Like I said, over the inheritance, you say Bruch Atov Meitiv, even though a death was involved. And this death might be terrible for millions of people. It might be the President of the United States or anything, something like that. But if you got inheritance out of it, then it's Shmuel Tovot. So if it's talking about subjective matters, how they affect me, how they affect us, then this last third of the Mishnah might better be placed with the first Mishnah, the matter of Nisim and Nekra Avodah Zarah. It's talking about then not just objective phenomena, but subjective matters, how it affects us. Which brings us to the question of why is it not? Back with the first Mishnah. Why, just say it once again, why is the matter of Bisurot Tovot and Bisurot Ra'ot not back in the first Mishnah? So then we have to find a distinction between the first Mishnah and the last third of our Mishnah. And the distinction has already been said around the table. I think this, the distinction is present and past. Right, that the first Mishnah is not just talking about subjective phenomena, how they affect Am Yisrael, but it's specifically talking about saying a bracha for things that didn't affect you in the present, but affected, happened in the past. They might affect you in the present, but it's through the past. Things are not happening now. Things that happened in the past. Our Mishnah is talking about things in the present. And under the rubric of things in the present comes both the objective and the subjective. Yeah. Okay, so now we can start. So all that is the groundwork for learning the Gemara. It's getting very late, I see. Wow. So we learned that. That was good. We learned something. I learned something, for certain. Okay, so we have in front of us the Gemara. A small portion of Gemara. It's in the packets. Small portion of Gemara. And it says, Al Heharim Valagvot, which we know are words in our Mishnah, on the hills and on the mountains, and says the Gemara, Atu kol hane de amaran ad hashta lav ma'aseh v'reishit ninhu v'haketiv b'rakim lamatar asa. Translation, after the Gemara brought the Dibur Matchil from the Mishnah, Al Harim Balagvot, on the mountains, on the hills, says the Gemara, Atu. Atu means Haim in Hebrew. Means, is it that? Could it be? Is it true? Kol Hane, all these, De Amaran, that we say, is it that all these that we say, Ad Hashta, until now, Lav Ma'aseh Breishit Ninu, not Maaseh Breishit they are? In other words, the Gemara is quoting from the Mishnah where it says Harim and Gvot, which is the second part of the Mishnah, and it's referring now back to the first part of the Mishnah. It says, are you telling me that all the matters that we said until now, that's the first part of the Mishnah, they're not Maaseh Breishit? Because the first part of the Mishnah was supposed to say the bracha of Kocho Ugvuato Mele Olam. And only the second part do we say the bracha of Oseh Maaseh Breishit. Are you telling me that all those things like thunder and lightning and comets and earthquakes, they're not Maaseh Breishit? The Haketiv, and behold, it's written in the Psalms, Brakim Lamatar Asa. When it describes the creation, it says God made, Brakim, he made thunder for the rain. So how can you tell me that all of these things that are events, extraordinary events, we don't say over them, Oseh Maaseh Breishit? They're not part of Maaseh Breishit? Ask the Gemara. And from this question, the Gemara goes on to completely, I would say, undermine the Mishnah. We have to think about this question deeply. The Gemara is deeply, deeply bothered by the fact that we would avoid saying the bracha of Oseh Maaseh Breishit over thunder and lightning and earthquakes, because they're also part of Maaseh Breishit. So, first of all, we have to remind ourselves why we thought the Mishnah does make sense. Because we said to ourselves half an hour ago that the bracha of Oseh Maaseh Breishit indicates that God at creation sets certain fixed phenomena, whereas other phenomena that arise at the moment, we don't call them Maaseh Breishit, we say Koho Gvurato Mele Olam. At this very moment, God is exhibiting His Koach and Gvura, and that's fine. It makes perfect sense that there should be two different brachot. Both because theologically we're looking at these phenomena differently, and also on the basis of the human emotions that are aroused.
Yeah.
When we see the hills and the valleys and the seas, we are filled with awe. And that's indicated by Osem Ma'aseh Bereshit. When we hear the thunder and lightning, we're filled with fear. We can imagine two different brachot because it's two different human emotions. So again, both as far as the theology behind it, as far as the human emotions involved, there's two different things going on here. Whereas the Gemara is bothered by this distinction. The Gemara wants us to say, Osem Ma'aseh Bereshit, over everything. Even over the thunder and the lightning. And we have to ask, why is the Gemara so adamant? What's really bothering the Gemara? Doesn't it understand what we understand? That it's two different brachot because it's two different phenomena, two different theologies, two different emotional reactions?
In the pasuk that it
you
brings...
That's a totally different phenomena. This is here, it's constant, and these are come temporarily.
Yeah.
But there are a number of different ways to understand the theological difference, because one is if we look at the grammar of the bracha, is that what the Gemara, in other words, when we looked at the grammar, we said it could be that the phenomenon of the hills, the mountains, Osei Ma'aseh Bereshit, where Hashem is the doer, or is it the phenomena themselves? Is the Gemara bothered by the... Do you get the impression the Gemara is bothered by the grammar of...
I don't know.
I'm putting the question, I don't know.
Let's just take a few minutes to think about this. Why is the Gemara so upset with the Mishnah?
When I think of Ma'aseh Bereshit, what's described in Bereshit Aleph, I don't see the Brakim, the Zvaot described
right, as
a king. So I don't know.
Right. In other words, I think the Mishnah is fine. Why is the Gemara so upset with it?
Just to assume, it's not creation, that God created at the time of creation, is absurd.
So is the Gemara afraid we would think? What is Gemara afraid we would think if we hold to the Mishnah?
I think it's a philosophical difference.
And what's the difference?
I think we said this already, that you're making a distinction between lightning and thunder and mountains and hills. That one is Ma'aseh Bereshit and maybe the other... is not included in
that. That's why the rabbis are so upset, is he saying?
Right, so I could have said that what's getting the Gemara so upset is if you don't say Osem Ma'aseh Bereshit over thunder and lightning, then that could give someone the impression that God didn't create these things, it's some other force that created them. But that can't be right. Because as we said, there's a different bracha, Kocho Gvurato Mele Olam, that also indicates that God's involved with them. It's not some other force. There's no danger we come to idolatrous thoughts by refraining from saying Osem Ma'aseh Bereshit. We say a different bracha, which still indicates that it's God. So again, what is bothering us here? What's bothering the Gemara? And the only conclusion I can come to is that the Gemara is bothered by the theology that would have us believe that the hills and the valleys are Ma'aseh Bereshit in the sense that they're once done and God's not involved anymore. In other words, we built a theology on the clear distinction in the Mishnah, there are some things that God's a watchmaker and some thing that God is constantly involved. And perhaps that distinction bothers the Gemara, because perhaps the Gemara wants to say that God is constantly involved in everything. So how could you split these two phenomena into those things God is involved and God is not involved? What I'm saying is not indicated in the words of the Gemara. It's just it's my effort to grasp at what is behind the Gemara's terrible problem with the Mishnah.
But what's ironic, I think, is that we said that it was the grammar of the Maaseh Bereshit Bracha that leads us to believe the watchmaker, in part.
Not the grammar. Well, the grammar helped us to believe it. You're
that
right.
Was part of it.
Yeah, it could be the Gemara just doesn't want us to have a separate bracha for fixed phenomena that might indicate that these fixed phenomena are simply fixed. And they're always like that, and Kodesh Baruch Hu is not involved. It wants to say that he's involved in everything, just as much as involved in the brachim and the zvaot and the zikim. So I don't know exactly, I'm guessing, but it's an important question, because the Gemara is about now to make mincemeat of the Mishnah on the basis of this question. What was the word you used?
You said absurd.
No, you had said something else. Can't remember. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Karoch Utane. That word Karoch is the root of the modern Hebrew word for sandwich. A krich. It means to put everything together. Krich Utane. Put it all, Karoch, put it all together, Vatane, and learn. And according to Rashi's explanation, it means that Abai holds you say both brachot on all of these phenomena. Wait, phenomena is the singular or the plural?
Phenomena is plural.
Oh, so that means in my sheet I was wrong consistently when I said phenomenon for the plural. Okay, doesn't matter. Okay, so anyway, so according to Rashi's interpretation of Amar Abaye, Kroch Vatane, sandwich them together and learn, it means you say both brachot for all phenomena. Whether it's the zva'ot or the zikim, the thunder and the lightning, the meteors, or whether it is the hills and the valleys, you say both brachot for both, for all.
Simultaneous.
One after the other, two brachot.
The other, right.
Two brachot. That's what Rashi seems to say. We don't have time to read the whole Rashi. Time is getting late. And then Rava Amar, Hata Mivarech Tarte. Over there, Hatam is over there, Mivarech Tarte. Tarte means two. In other words, for the first part of the Mishnah, for the Brakim, for the thunder and the lightning and the comets, you bless both. Now, it says, Rav, I agree with you that you say two brachot, but I agree with you only concerning the events. But I don't agree with you concerning the fixed features of the landscape. So I'll read it again. Rav Amar, Hata Mivarech Tarte. Over there you bless both. Baruch Shekocho Malei Olam Ve Oseh Maaseh Bereshit. Hacha, here in the second part of the Mishnah, Oseh Maaseh Bereshit Ika, the brach of Oseh Maaseh Bereshit, there is. Shekocho Malei Olam Leka, there isn't. Oseh Maaseh Bereshit, there is. In other words, Rava says that when the Mishnah says you say Oseh Maaseh Bereshit over the fixed phenomena, that's true. But when the Mishnah says over the event you say Shekocho Gvurato Malei Olam, no, there you say both brachot. So just say it once again, make sure everyone got it. Over thunder and lightning you say two brachot. Over the hills and the valleys, you say just Oseh Maaseh Bereshit. That's Rava, and the halacha is like Rava. So we have to think about that a second. Just to say it once again, Rava says we accept the fact that over hills and valleys, we say Oseh Maaseh Bereshit. We say Oseh Maaseh Bereshit.
Just like the Mishnah.
Just like the Mishnah.
Everybody agrees.
Everyone agrees. But over the thunder and lightning, in addition to what the Mishnah says we say, shekochog brotom leolam, you have to also say bruchosem asev reshit. You have to indicate that these things are part of Maaseh Bereshit. And they're not just... Now, while you're absorbing that, I have to add one other thing into it, which is a machloket Rashi and Tosfot. When it says we say both, does both mean both, or does both mean either?
Or you take your choice.
Right. Rashi seems to say that both means both. Tosfot says that both means either. So to sum it up now, everything together, when the Mishnah says over the hills and valleys, I say, Oseh Maaseh Bereshit, yes, that's true, according to Rava. When the Mishnah says that over the thunder and lightning, I say, Kochog Vorato Melei Olam, no. Rather, over thunder and lightning, I say both. Rashi says both means both. Tosfot says both means either.
Rashi says both means either?
No, Rashi says both means both.
Oh. Tosfot's allowing subjectivity a little bit, right? Is that Tosfot is allowing the individual to choose based on his perception?
I would have thought Tosfos has a problem with saying an extra bracha and is saying, oh no, they could have meant that. Don't say two brachas. That's too many. You know, it's superfluous saying God's name in vain. So they really, you meant choose one.
Yeah, because Tosfos doesn't give us any indication of what the criterion are to make a decision. He just says you can't say both.
You can't say both.
But I'm actually bothered by Tosfos because of the whole theology is that the Gemara wants us to say Oseh Maaseh Bereshit even over the events, then Tosfot actually pulls the rug out from under the carpet by saying it's either.
Both apply.
Say it again?
Both apply.
Both apply, according to Tosfot, according to Rashi, not just that both apply, but actually do say both.
Well, Tosfot's the reactionary. Going back to the Mishnah.
He's allowing us to go back to the Mishnah in a certain sense. Yeah. Oh, that's actually a very good point. Tosfot would allow us to do what the Mishnah says to do.
Right.
Which is clearly not what the Gemara is saying, because the Gemara has a big problem with this Mishnah. We're not exactly sure why, but the Gemara has a problem with this Mishnah. That's a very good point. I'm going to... Tosfot. Thank you.
For theological clarification, might the Rambam be the place to look?
No, he doesn't say anything.
Okay. Oh, unfortunately.
Okay. So Tosfot allows us to go back to the Mishnah. That's true. Well, I was planning to spend about an hour on the Halakha, but we'll only spend, I guess, 10 minutes on the Halakha. Whatever we finish, we will. Whatever we don't, we won't.
Can I just note?
Yes. Yeah.
We're not finishing Brachos, this piece, before the Hanukkah break. Mm-hmm. There's no reason you can't continue next week.
Would everyone like to?
That would be fine with me, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to...
Okay.
See, you think we're trying to finish something.
we hope
we don't get to the end of this.
That actually was the subject of my Devar Torah. You read it yesterday. It's not about the end, it's about the process.
Yeah. And that's, we don't feel a need to get to the end of the class by the end of the class.
Okay.
You can. I mean, that's my view.
Okay.
You know.
So why don't we next week continue on the halakha? I assume we'll also have time to begin the next Mishnah.
Yeah.
Very good. So we can end here.
Okay. 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 Do you have somebody for me?